Is this Mr. Tommy Chung?
Who's calling?
This is Spud Goodman. You remember me?
Who?
Spud Goodman. Who? I kind of have a radio show.
Spud's not here. Sorry.
This is Spud Goodman.
Who's calling?
Spud Goodman.
Who? Spud Goodman.
It's Spud, S-P-U-D.
Spud's not here.
You're listening to Inside the Spud Goodman Radio Show.
Let's get ready, Trumbo! And here he is, the head cheese meister. It's Spud Goodman.
Greetings and our hola. My name is Spud Goodman.
The Spud Man.
I want to give a shout out to our listeners in Mexico before we get going here. Please forgive us, ugly Americans, for our dumbass president. It's getting really embarrassing for some of us. Well, anyway, let's just start this thing. We have an autopsy to conduct here. On this one, we're going to be taking apart the Loyalty Pledge episode that first aired on 11/9/2017, and it featured comedian and Comedy Central host Jordan Klepper, musician and author Patty Schemmel, a visit with our show's resident psychic, Mr. Ted Marr, and our musical guest was Kai Alfred Hillig. A really nifty show, if my memory serves me correctly. I mean, at times, you know, I kind of even forget my own middle name, so don't hold me to it if you think this one sucks. Let's get started so you can make up your own mind. Yeah, that makes sense. Let me bring on our podcast's designated laugher, my Aunt Dorothy. Give us a little snicker, if you would.
Oh, you know, a good snicker requires even more skilled subtlety than a chuckle, Spud. Most people put way, way too much energy in a snicker. They go way over the top.
Yeah, well, I guess. Anyway, no, but you are the expert on the laughing thing. Now I'm forced to acknowledge our show's temporary permanent co-host, Gerald Holcomb. Just say hi and let's move on here.
Hi. Hello. Okay. How is everyone doing out there? I am.
Excuse me. Do you think you're communicating with aliens from a distant planet or something? How is everyone doing out there? Let's just keep our discussion to residents of Earth, if you don't mind. And now I need to bring on our intern, Chance. Go ahead and say, you know, what you want. As I've been instructed by our executive producer to give you more airtime. She seems to be impressed that you're some kind of rap star. I mean, nah. I guess, and that you'll now be like bringing us more of an urban demographic listening audience, which I won't lie would be really cool.
Don't go out there with that hat on.
But I seriously doubt you could pull that off. Anyway, just say something.
Oh, with my new rap cassette blowing up, I'm pretty confident that I can bring my fans to any project I'm involved in, even this cheesy little podcast. What can I say? People love me. I'm mother effing Chance. If you mess with me, I might come up from behind and pull down your pants. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I could ask for corroborating evidence to support that bold statement of yours, but I need to begin our look back at the Loyalty Pledge episode. It's kind of an appropriate one to look back at, as then freaking Donald Trump 1.0 was demanding all the people he brought in on, you know, in his first administration to basically pledge their total devotion to him. I will admit, as much as I despised him then and now, I thought it was kind of cool that he could make so many people that work for him kiss his ass to such a degree. I'm not going to get into the level of loyalty he's now demanding in his second time around, because I mean, it's beyond disgusting. I cannot believe what I'm seeing, but anyway, that can be taken on in another episode.
Listen, Spud, everyone should pledge their loyalty to Donald Trump. He deserved it back then, and of course now, and he's basically the king overseeing everyone on Earth.
These guys, they make millions of dollars. They're smart as hell.
He's not my king.
I know all rappers dig Trump, but I just can't get on board with that. I'll make my own way in hip-hop. I might endorse Justin Bieber if he runs in 2028.
They want to shatter your mind talking about Justin Bieber!
He's a Canadian citizen, so he can't run for office in this country.
By then, I'm sure our wonderful president, Donald Trump, will make Canada our 51st state. So Justin might be able to run for our highest office, maybe.
God forbid. And if any of our friends from up north in Canada are listening right now, Don't blame normal Americans for that moronic dude playing our president right now. He does not represent all of us, okay? Anyway, let's just get focused on what a loyalty pledge entails and how, you know, I was at the time temporarily impressed with the benefits of being worshipped as a god. Yeah, I mean, it was very enticing, I have to say. Yeah, so let's play the first in-studio segment of the loyalty pledge episode. Dave, hit it.
In that manner? Hey, no harm, no foul, don't anyway.
Golly,
so there's something I wanted to bring up. And yeah, it might be best to do this off the air, but if we did it on the air, then it's public record, and there's, you know, no way anyone, you know, can deny it later, or staff here in the studio, there's no way they could say they weren't formally notified of my request. That's my thinking.
Wait, are you going to bring up your sensitivity to aftershave lotion and perfume?
No,
I just want you to know I'm not using any foreign substance right now, Spud, not even deodorant, as I know you say you are very prone to suffer migraines.
Seriously.
Well, I hope you at least use soap when you shower.
Of course.
No, that's not what I was going to bring up.
I do occasionally. Spud. I splash a very minor amount of Old Spice behind my ears each morning. My wife loves the stuff, but I'm sure it dissipates significantly by the time we get to the studio here, so nobody can probably smell it.
I'm going to have to go ahead and sort of disagree with you there.
Well, can you maybe switch to, say, Chaps? I've been meaning to ask you for months. I just can't stand Old Spice. Just think about it, all right? Hmm. But that too is not what I was going to bring up on the show. What I feel is needed is a clear display of loyalty to me by the staff here in the studio. I think it would do wonders for morale.
You know, I don't feel we have a morale problem with staff members, Spud.
Oh, I certainly haven't picked that up. Whose morale is down?
Well, me, for one.
Oh, boy.
I was thinking, what might give me like a boost in confidence is if everyone pledged their loyalty to me. It would only take a few minutes.
And it only makes common sense. Yeah.
Are you serious about this? You want us to pledge our loyalty to you?
Really? Even family members?
Well, Aunt Dorothy, you could probably get a waiver.
Oh, I guess so.
Didn't you go on a rant when our current president had his staff do something like this at a cabinet meeting?
Well, yes, but you called Trump a weak little weasel when he ordered all of his people to kiss his ass publicly.
Well, I know, but I thought about it more, a lot more, and it's not a bad idea. I mean, that old broke clock is right twice a day saying is still true, even with Trump. I myself, you know, keep picking up the vibe. Everyone on this show hates my guts and thinks I'm not a legitimate talk show host. So who wants to go first?
I will. Here goes.
Okay.
Spud Goodman, it is an honor to work for you as your co-host.
That's it? That's all you got?
Yeah, okay, but give me a minute and I can add to it. I need to gather my thoughts here.
Too late, you know?
If you have to stop and gather anything, then it's not from the heart.
Well,
I mean, true loyalty does not need to be gathered up.
Do
you think I'm going to buy insincere loyalty? I am severely disappointed in you.
In me?
Yes. Anyway, I'm supposed to introduce...
I still feel you were too quick to judge my pledge of loyalty as insincere. You know, you were mistaken, Spud. I have, over the years, displayed total 100% unconditional loyalty to you, and it was hurtful for you not to acknowledge such.
Still, I just don't buy your pledge to this day. And, you know, whatever you said, I feel you're just mouthing words that you think I want to hear.
You know, people lie a lot, so you got to be on your toes.
Gerald. You've mentioned to me over the years how frustrated you are working with Spud, so I do understand his disbelief in your pledge.
Yeah, you always talk behind Spud's back when he's not in the studio. I wouldn't call that total loyalty.
You're making me out to be a disgruntled employee who cares only about himself, and that couldn't be more untrue. I am a very loyal member of this team.
Team? It was my radio show and now my podcast, so I am the team. And you, Gerald, are more like a team manager rather than a member.
Well,
come on.
That's a fairly accurate description of his role.
Yes!
Team manager works for me.
No, I'm way more than a team manager, you guys. I am a
I got to move on here, okay? Right now, we are going to play my interview with Comedy Central host Jordan Klepper. At that time, he hosted a show on that network, The Opposition, that looked at events and people who were, you know, creating such a mess in that time frame. And Trump, of course, sure brings the mess, right? So, Dave, run the segment.
Hey, Spud, your first guest, Jordan Klepper, is on hold for you right now.
You know, his new show on Comedy Central is pretty darn good. Very subtle satire done quite well, I must say.
You know, I found the shows on Comedy Central tend to make fun of President Trump.
And then you wonder why some people don't like me, folks.
I guess I tend to see things differently than most comedians these days.
Well, I think they take the facts and go from there. It's not a comedian's fault that Trump does and says idiotic things every single day. They deal with the truth.
Yeah, Facts and Friends starts right now.
I mean, the guy's embarrassed this country, and it's going to take years to recover. Anyway, you still feel good about your vote, by the way? You tired of all that winning?
Well, not at all. And I would absolutely vote for him again. He is a true leader.
You dick!
All right, my head's exploding right now. Just put Jordan through. I don't even want to...
Okay, here he is.
Say hello to Comedy Central's Jordan Klepper. Thanks much for visiting with us.
Spud, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Okay, let's discuss your show, The Opposition, with Jordan Klepper, that airs Monday through Thursday at 11:30 p.m., 10:30 Central on Comedy Central. Who are you opposing?
I'm opposing everybody. Everybody who's against me. I'm anti-establishment. I'm anti-mainstream. I'm anti-helping the world move forward in a progressive direction. I don't quite know what I'm for, but I'll tell you what I'm against.
Okay, super. This is just me, but I know there are clowns on both sides, but, you know, that word both sides has been bleached beyond recognition these days. One side, you know, can be totally culpable on some things, and history's recording it right now for kids in future civics classes.
I mean, that is true. It feels like a whole new time. I think what we got excited about with this show was, you know, we're joking about this idea of being anti-everything because we started to see bubbling up in American culture, especially over this Trump campaign. We started to see these fringe media sources kind of concoct their own news, kind of being farther and farther on the outside, getting brought back into the inside. And you're like, oh, we are as a country starting to choose the news that makes us feel better about ourselves, the news that validates our own opinions, to the point that, like, we're having press briefings right now where people are denying things that are said minutes before on tape. And you're like, oh, I think you stumbled on a good point. Like, oh, years from now, people will look back on this and say, like, why were you guys so confused? You know you were telling two different narratives, right? And we'll be like, I don't know. That was a crazy time.
Yeah, well, hey, can you explain what the term mainstream media really means? We've discussed this term numerous times on this show. Does that mean, like, Fox News, what they're really saying is that any media that rejects Hillary shot Vince Foster?
I think that's where we're at right now. I think right now, mainstream is being defined as other. Like, if it's against what you feel, you can call it mainstream, and now that is pejorative. Where it is, I think it's comical to see Fox News and Fox and Friends rail against mainstream media when they have the ratings to put them right at the top, and the President of the United States is tweeting at them, telling them how good a job they're doing, and they're anti-mainstream. It does make you question, like, what are we really referencing right here? And it's like, oh, we're vilifying something that is other than what we think. And that seems to be the term of the day.
All right. Well, you know, I've seen a number of your field segments, and you are fearless. Any close calls fending off irate subjects when you're done shooting?
We've definitely had some where the look in the eye and the clench of the fist has caused me to move off really quickly. I think I went to a lot of Trump rallies over this past election cycle, and they got fairly contentious, and less so because I was, you know, my interactions with people, but just being the presence of media there was something that was scorned. We were followed the last few times we went to Trump rallies. We were followed by people who were convinced we were working for the CIA and working for Hillary Clinton. And so there was just this air of paranoia that kind of made it somewhat of a dangerous and delicate place to be.
So you were basically dealing with the InfoWars crowd, huh? Basically?
We definitely were. And that was even part of the ideas for this show. As I was going to those rallies, I would talk to people, and where they were getting a lot of their news, they were getting it from InfoWars, they were getting it from other online sources, Breitbart, like these alt sites. It was like, oh, this seems to be what's fueling a lot of this energy.
Huh. Well, let's talk the process. Just how tough is it these days for you, you know, to satirically take on current events when untouched, pristine reality is often funny enough without any comedic work? Is it a challenge?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, what we try to do is we try to take that mindset and the way in which kind of with this we see reality go to crazy town so quickly, because there is this paranoia, there is this ability to choose the news that makes you feel like you are right. And so for us, what we do is, like, we get to adopt that point of view, the opposition. I get to be this paranoid guy who sees enemies everywhere. So I think what it gives us permission to do is take small stories and create those culture wars as well. So, like, what we see it happen with Neil Gate and the NFL and what have you, where you're like, oh, suddenly this is now a culture war. Donald Trump just took what was happening at NFL that started a year ago, and he made this a giant culture war. Now we're all arguing over the flag and whether or not players should be kneeling or standing. It's like, oh, great, so let's take that point of view, and we can now talk about skeletons and how skeletons are the enemy within. Like, we can project culture war on anything and create enemies out of anything. And for that, that's kind of where some of our satire lives.
Yeah, I kind of think we're living in a Hunter Thompson-esque opium-infused nightmare without Nixon, maybe, but Trump's a decent fill-in. I don't know. Just my take.
It definitely feels like that. Or if not, that's at least a coping mechanism for us.
Yeah.
I'll take that as a prescription.
Yeah, okay, all right. That's off the record, by the way. So,
fair enough.
Let me ask you, how much editorial freedom does Comedy Central give you in the daily production of the show? Do they send you a ton of notes?
No, they're actually great partners with us on this, and they have been with The Daily Show as well. Like, they trust us, and I think the show moves so fast. Like, they, you know, we check in and we have conversations about the show and about where we're going, but day in and day out, it's on us to, like, sift through the news and the way in which we see it and the way in which we want to present it, and we go from our gut. And I think we've been lucky that the network has trusted us with that.
Ah, super.
Excuse me, Spud.
Yes?
But aren't you envious of how Comedy Central suits allow Jordan complete control over his total editorial content?
Yeah, well...
Well, I mean, you continue to be harassed by our executive producer, Lori, and you must get 20 notes a show from her, right?
Hey, Jordan, just give me a brief moment. Yeah, I mean, those notes sent via email from her are as annoying as hell, but between you and me, I flagged all of her stuff as spam, and now they're sent right to the trash. It's sort of the cycle of life for annoying emails.
Why would you say this over the air? You know she's listening somewhere right now.
Yeah, maybe that wasn't too smart on my behalf. Okay, not all of them are sent directly to trash. I've glanced at a couple in the last few months.
Well, you know I have a problem with authority myself, Spud, but I've always been worried about you and your self-destructive behavior career-wise. Now, I'm sorry I brought it up. Just get back to Jordan.
Yeah, okay. Hey, man, I'm back.
Oh, great.
Well, you previously hosted a Comedy Central special, Jordan Klepper Solves Guns. So, how long did it take you to come up with a solution, and did you face much opposition from the gun lobby?
Well, I hate to say, but we didn't get a final solution to that. Spoiler alert.
Oh, okay.
Came closest to on that was, like, for me, I was really excited about that issue. I covered gun control a lot on The Daily Show, and what I started to see was, like, the conversation was being hijacked by the gun lobby, and in a way that made this country feel much more divided on the gun issue than it really is. And so what was exciting for me in that special was to talk to a lot of people on both sides who really were much more moderate. And I do think, like, the takeaway for me was, like, oh, if we take away the 5% of gun owners who are part of the NRA and the 100 people who speak for the NRA, like, what you have is most Americans who just want to figure out a way to keep guns out of the hands of people who can do harm with them. Like, we all want that. And I think there is a conversation that can be had that can be productive around common sense gun control. And what's so frustrating is that conversation keeps getting hijacked by just a very small amount of people who are controlling it.
With a whole lot of money.
A whole lot of money, and they know how to activate, they know how to control small elections, and they know how to give that money to to people in power, even on the small state level, so that there is no conversation taking place.
Thank you again for coming on our show.
Of course, Spud, thank you.
Mr. Jordan Klepper.
You know, I'll be honest, I'm not a fan of Jordan. He doesn't seem to get President Trump, and, you know, that's going to hurt his career.
It hasn't hurt my career. Okay, well, maybe because no one, you know, knows I have a career, so it can't be damaged. I'll cop to that, whatever. But I firmly believe Jordan Klepper is one of the smartest and funniest field correspondents ever on TV, second only to Triumph the Insult Comedy Dog. He sets a really high bar, as Robert Smigel is a genius. There's no doubt.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I'm a big fan of Triumph the Insult Comedy Dog. He kills every time he's on the air.
Yeah, he's really funny.
Yeah, all right. What is this about a comedy dog? Dogs can't tell jokes. How can he be in the comedy field? It just doesn't make sense.
Shut the f*** up, Donnie.
Well, let's now go to my visit with our show's resident psychic, Mr. Ted Marr. Yeah, on this one, I think Ted talks about speaking with world leaders who are now, you know, like on the other side, basically dead. Okay. Anyway, Dave, play it, please. Please say hello to our show's psychic, Mr. Ted Marr. How you doing, man?
Oh, I'm fine, Spud. It's really good to talk to you.
Right. So I've been wondering if maybe you could connect with our country's founding fathers on that psychic phone line or whatever it is you guys use to make contact with dead people. You know, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, those guys. I'm talking pre-Putin here.
All right. I have talked to Benjamin Franklin before.
Oh, yeah. He's in there. He's in that group.
He's interesting. He's definitely interesting. Once, and Thomas Jefferson. I haven't connected with George Washington, but I have connected with Benjamin Franklin the most.
All right, super. Well, I got to believe they're freaked out now seeing what's going on in the White House, or I should say maybe Mar-a-Lago. Every day I flip on TV and I'm scared to see the latest drip of, you know, of information coming out regarding some wacky conspiracy theory. Ask them if they ever gave much thought to coming up with a plan B if this country ever had such a hashtag clown as a president.
You know, I'm so glad you asked me that, because there is a quote that Benjamin Franklin has given me now, and he said, back in 1787, those who would give up liberty for security deserve neither. And that's, unfortunately, so much of what we've given up in the last, I don't know, since 9/11 has been so much security for, so much liberty for security. And Ben Franklin said, like, 200 or 300 years ago, he said that it's not a trade-off. You always should have, the country was founded on liberty.
Yes.
And it's interesting he came through just now with that quote.
All right, thank him for that. Well, let me ask you this. Ask Alexander Hamilton. You know, he's in that posse. What do you think of the play about him? See if he would pay a couple $100 to see it.
He would.
He would?
All right. He would, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. All right, can you ask all of them if they had to deal with fake news in their day? I know cable wasn't around, obviously, so there was no Fox News, but were there town criers out there spreading misinformation to influence the vote? I'm betting maybe there must have been a hero like Shep Smith back then, too, fighting to correct the mistruths.
You're so funny. Actually, Ben Franklin is... Yeah, Benjamin Franklin, there wasn't so-called fake news back then, but Benjamin Franklin has the perspective of time being on the other side. He's been around for hundreds of years now.
Yeah.
And he said there was one other leader in the recent history who banned fake news, and that was Adolf Hitler in the 1930s Germany.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right.
Remember that guy. And,
yeah, that guy.
Yeah, that guy. And he did it in an attempt to silence the free press. And we all know what happened since that time. So the founding fathers are all saying, and the founding mothers too, because they all had mothers and, you know, it was a group thing.
Spud.
What?
Well, I can't let that last remark go without trying to correct the record. There were no founding mothers. The women back then knew what role they were born to play, and they did not try to interfere in the work of the founding fathers.
Did you graduate from that Bob Jones University? Where do you get these caveman talking points?
I have stated previously, I have a BA in business from BYU.
Right, right, okay, right. Did you get a minor, though, in prehistoric philosophy?
No.
Just let me get back to Ted.
All right, well, I appreciate the information. Thanks so much for checking in with us again.
Oh, my pleasure, Spud. It's always fun to talk to you.
All right, our resident psychic, Mr. Ted Marr.
I just don't understand how Ted speaks with all of those world leaders who are now no longer with us. You know, only God can communicate with those souls who have passed on to hopefully heaven or unfortunately maybe hell.
I'm not gonna expose, you know, Ted's industry secrets. That's his own private business. All I know is each week he would come on the show and tell us what some, you know, famous dead person was now saying to him. So who am I to question what he does?
I don't know if I buy psychics or not. I still haven't made up my mind. Dorothy wants me to get my cards read, you know, to see if my rap career will be massively successful or just really, really successful.
Well, and we'll be going to get your cards read next week, honey. You'll love the woman I see. She's really amazing.
You know, how can a human being see the future from a deck of cards?
You stupid, ignorant son of a bitch, dumb bastard!
Oh, Gerald, you are the biggest buzzkill I have ever encountered. Just no fun at all.
Okay, we are now going to play another segment from our in-studio discussion back then on the Loyalty Pledge episode. Gerald, I remember, you know, you were like trying to weasel out of your pledge after I said your initial effort was less than satisfactory, you know, and you, Chance, gave me a really, really weak pledge, too. Well, let's hear the evidence of what I just laid out. Dave, hit it.
Okay, so, Spud, can we dispense with further public pronouncements of support for you? I was willing to step up and speak for everyone in saying that we are thankful that you choose to work with us.
You know, people lie a lot, so you got to be on your toes.
It would be nice to hear from some other staff members, too. How about a couple of the interns? You know, I've often felt that they don't really have a great deal of respect for me and what I do.
Okay, very well. Hey, Chance, can you come over to the mic here for a second?
Why are you bothering Chance? After all, he is one of the sharper interns.
Yeah?
Yeah, he's kind of the best and the brightest of the whole bunch.
Yes, okay. Stand right here. Okay, go ahead, Chance. Tell Spud that you are grateful for the opportunity to work for him on this show.
You can't tell him what to say.
Well,
that detracts from the power of his loyalty pledge. Go ahead, man. Just say what's in your heart.
It's not that bad doing my internship here on the show. I mean, I am bored most of the time, but I have a friend who's doing his at an advertising agency in Seattle, and he says it totally blows there.
Okay.
Go ahead and tell Spud how he is a role model for you interns. You know, that maybe someday you too will host your own radio show.
Why would I want to do that? Radio is so over these days. I want to direct. You know, make movies.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
The movies?
Hmm.
Being a talk show host is not that lame. Come on. And you make it sound like it's in there with being a telemarketer or a life insurance salesman.
My dad sells life insurance. It's not that bad of a job.
Oh, Spud.
He owns a Lamborghini.
Oh, Spud, really? Leave him be.
Okay. But would it kill the kid to say he looks up to me and is grateful for this gig? I mean, come on.
Well, we don't get paid, you know, but I still appreciate this internship as it's really close to my apartment. So thanks, Spud. Will that do?
Yeah, I guess. Just go back and resume playing video games on your phone, man.
Get him out of here!
Okay.
Right away!
All right, okay. So are you feeling a bit better now, Spud? There's a lot of love for you in this studio.
Yeah, after all, you are my nephew.
Well, thank you, Aunt Dorothy. You know how important loyalty has been to me since I was little.
Yes, I do. I remember when your mom was the den mother for your scout pack, and you coerced her into passing around a printout that said you were the top Cub Scout in America that year.
Yes, I was.
Yeah, but I knew that document was phony, of course. But boy, you never looked so happy. That constant frown of yours was nowhere to be seen.
Well, I vividly remember that proclamation. I still have it somewhere in my sock drawer.
Really?
Now, that was a real pledge of loyalty from my mom.
You know, I thought mine was pretty good.
What's your name, scumbag?
Chance, You actually said your apartment on that show. And at that time, I was not aware that you lied. Like you told a real whopper. We all know now that you were then and still are living at your parents' house. You know, at least until after your wedding to my aunt. And then you can start, you know, sponging off her.
Yeah, I might have told a little white lie back then. I didn't want people to know I still live at home with my parents. Now I could care less. Free rent and food makes it easy to deal with the humiliation.
What are you people? On dope?
Oh, don't let Spud make you feel like you're not an equal member of our relationship, Chance. Just because you don't have your own revenue stream yet, you know, until you start receiving royalties from your rap cassette.
We've sold almost 100 cassette tapes, so the money will be rolling in soon, Dorothy.
You know, Chance, you really should pursue a financial advisor if you, in fact, to be taking in so much revenue in the coming months, like a real professional. I happen to know such a person. He goes to my church, and he handles all of my financial affairs.
Affairs? You don't have enough money to call it an affair with your money. So you wouldn't have to have that second job of yours at the carpet and linoleum store.
South Seattle Carpet and Linoleum.
Anyway, we're now going to play my interview with our musical guest, Kai Alfred Hillig, and hear him perform live in the studio. Dave, hit it.
It's musical guest interview time. Please say hello to a very talented man, Kai Alfred Hillig. Welcome back to the show, Kai.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You have a brand new album out titled Fossil, and I must say, it is quite amazing. We played a cut off it earlier in the show, and I will say there's no filler on this record. All 10 songs are very strong.
I'm glad to hear you feel that way.
I absolutely do. I mean, I'm speaking from the heart here. So you now perform with a full band live. How different is this for you as you've been a solo act for a great deal of the time in your career so far?
It's not too different. It's just a different group of fellows. And, you know, I often play with lots of different kinds of people live and try to do what I can to make the record do what it can live. So,
how full a lineup did you bring into the studio? How many people participated in this record?
I think like maybe around 9 folks or so, something like that.
All right. You know, music can be a very powerful vehicle for social change. Did you feel responsibility at all when sitting down to write Fossil to address issues important to you? Or what was your starting point when you began the record?
Yeah, we actually started recording on Inauguration Day. But I also didn't want to, like, beat the drum too hard. I didn't want it to be kind of too political. I just wanted it to take a little bit of address the emotional kind of wear and tear of what's going on instead of making it all about, you know, he who shall remain nameless.
I just wrote that note down. I'll review that later when we're done.
Fair enough.
I'm going to close with this. Off the record, looking back in time, were you Team Edward or Team Jacob? It's not going to go any further.
Probably Team Jacob, I think, yeah.
Okay. All right, super. That's surprising, but all right. Okay, well, you're going to now perform another cut off the new record, Fossil, which is, by the way, available at your Bandcamp site and other places too, right?
Yeah, iTunes and Spotify and so forth, yeah.
Super. But this time it's just going to be you and a guitar, so what song are you going to do?
I'm going to do a song called Somewhere Over the Rainbow One Too Many Times.
All right, let's do it.
All righty.
My heart in darkness. Not usually how I dress, but I can if you'd like. Put on a mask face by the cards that Hallmark makes. Many drank the Kool-Aid and thought it tasted alright. Nothing wrong with feeling right, with getting along or bringing this world a little light. But I've heard home too many times.
Goodman Radio Show.
Kai has been on our show many times over the years, and I just don't get why he isn't a major freaking star by now. He can write, play, and sing like any of the so-called major male singer-songwriters out there. You know, the music biz is so random.
Maybe if he tried to rap, you know, put a little hip-hop in his music, it might get him a major label deal. I think I'm only a few months away from getting my own deal.
Come on, yo.
And Gerald, I'm looking now for a financial advisor for Chance. Once he's on a major label and when all the royals start rolling in, you know, it's wise to prepare in advance for his superstardom.
Yeah, I wouldn't sign an agreement with any financial advisor until this kid, you know, has some money, some real money of his own. That guy might end up managing Chance's weekly allowance if this rap thing doesn't work out. Now, I wanted to run this by you. I heard you're still going to give Chance the same allowance his parents do right now when he moves in after the wedding. At least he had to do chores at his parents' house for the money. When he moves in to your place, will you assign him chores, at least a few things?
It's not personal, Sonny. It's strictly business.
Dorothy won't be paying me my allowance once I get my advance from the record company.
Yeah, wouldn't it be the cassette company? You put out a cassette tape, right?
Yes, for now, Gerald. It's only available on cassette. But in time, it will be released on vinyl, too.
Right. I'll keep my turntable ready to go whenever that happens. Yeah. Okay, let's move on to my interview with musician and author Patty Schemmel. She has led a fascinating life as she was very involved in the Seattle music scene in the late 80s. And through the grunge explosion into the 90s, you know, when every A&R person on earth temporarily moved to Seattle. And I mean, they were everywhere. I mean, everywhere. They were signing kids in grade school on the hope that someday they would start a band too.
You know, I've heard so much about that Seattle grunge scene over the years, but I just didn't understand what everyone was talking about back then. Well, and now, for that sake, I mean, what the heck is a grunge?
I can't take this!
Well, it's a musical genre, Gerald. It's loud, heavy, and quite messy. Not exactly pop music.
My dad was really into grunge. He still plays Alice in Chains and Soundgarden at full volume on the stereo when my mom isn't home.
You know, why would anyone want to listen to loud and, as you said, Mrs. Jarvis, messy music? That sounds uncomfortable.
Oh, really? There is no need for anyone to explain this to him.
Yeah, you're so right. Okay, well, let's play my interview with Patty. I should mention she was also the drummer in Courtney Love's band, Hole. You know, I can only imagine it was never boring at that band's practice sessions, right? Anyway, Dave, run the segment.
Please welcome musician and author Patty Schimmel to the show. Thanks much for checking in with us.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you have a new book out, and it is titled Hit So Hard, a memoir that details your career in the rock world. It's now available everywhere, so people need to just ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, let's deal with it. So you had an up-close and personal view of the Seattle music scene in the 90s. I also witnessed it, but from the sidelines. It truly was a great time to catch live music, though, for sure, wouldn't you say?
Yes, it was. And, in my story, in one of my earlier bands, Doll Squad, we played your show.
Yes.
You had a show, as I'm telling you what you... it was Bud Goodman show. It was every cool band in town played on your show, and I remember wanting to be on it too. And we played, I think, two songs. And this was maybe in the late 80s.
Oh, I remember 89. It. I clearly remember it.
Yeah.
I still have that. I got to dig that out, that file out. Maybe I'll send it your way. But anyway.
Yes, please.
But, you know, there were so many great bands playing nightly, and it was so tough in those days to figure out who you were going to go see.
Yeah, I remember playing around. You know, there was downtown Seattle, there was all those clubs, and then there was also the great scene in Tacoma and Olympia. And so it was a great time, and it was just kind of before everything just took off.
Right.
91, 92.
Right. Well, you know, in that era, women kind of finally took charge and carved out their own space. And what it was basically a boys' club in town or basically probably everywhere. But things changed in that era, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. And I saw so many more women playing in punk rock, at least. I saw more women playing instruments and being in bands in town in Seattle. And then naturally started playing in other bands with women and playing shows.
Right. Well, I got to ask you, at what age did you decide to be a drummer?
I was 11.
Oh.
Yeah, and I would play along to whatever was on the, you know, local rock station on my headphones, and until I discovered punk rock, and then I found other weird freaks like me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, well...
Say, Spud... Well, have I ever mentioned that I, too, was a musician? I played the trumpet in grade school, and I was pretty darn good, too. I was second chair in our school band. I like to think I could have been a successful professional musician if my dad had not accidentally lost my trumpet.
Patty, I need to take just a brief break here, just a sec. Are you sure he lost it accidentally? Really? I mean, how often did you play the thing around the house?
Oh, I don't know. Pretty much every night before I'd go to bed.
Okay, then.
Like Patty, I would play along to songs on the radio. You know, like Chicago and 1910 Fruit Gum Company.
Oh, now you know why I never had kids of my own.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one for sure, Aunt Dorothy. Okay, I got to get back to Patty. Okay, I have returned.
Hey.
Let's go back and do a little history here. In 1992, you joined Hole after a recommendation from Kurt Cobain. Is it a true story you were once considered as a drummer for Nirvana before Dave Grohl signed on? Is that true?
I don't know. You know, I mean, Kurt has said that. I was never, no one ever contacted me and said, hey, do you want to try out or anything? But he did recommend me for Hole, so that's how I got into playing drums. With
you could have handled it. I mean, you got skills. I mean, you definitely got skills. So, but anyway.
All right. Thank you. You know, my recollection of the music scene back then was with Courtney, that she was somewhat of a polarizing figure within the music community. In the early days of Hole, how much drama and tension was there? Or was it just smooth sailing? I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, definitely not smooth sailing. But, you know, when I was in a band called Sybil, we opened for Hole in their early incarnation of Hole. And mm-hmm. I'd heard so many different, you know, myths and rumors, you know, like, you know, she was Jerry Garcia's illegitimate daughter, or she was the heir to the Bausch & Lomb Corporation. Like all these crazy sort of rumors would swirl around. And so eventually when I did, you know, join Hole, I was kind of interested in, like, what, you know, who is this person? So, and there, of course, there was the drama around her being Kurt's wife and constantly trying, you know, once I joined Hole, we had to sort of, you know, prove ourselves as an actual band and not just Kurt's wife band.
Right, right. Well, later you left the band during the Celebrity Skin recording sessions in, I think, 98 due to musical differences. Also during that period, you were dealing with substance abuse issues too, correct?
Yes. And that sort of is, you know, musical differences is always a nice way of saying I was a drug addict and couldn't hack it. And I mean, it was a real, there were some issues around a producer for that record. And the band was taking a definite different direction, a more, you know, kind of a they were looking at being a little more slick and
mainstream, a little bit more.
Yes, that would be the word. And also I was dealing with, you know, in and out of rehab constantly in that cycle and not really, you know, up for any kind of, you know, creating a record or writing. So eventually I ended up, you know, leaving the band and getting, and then after that, you know, homeless from my drug addiction. And so the book is a lot about that journey and, you know, having that feeling of like hopelessness, mm-hmm. but then making it through to the other side.
What was a turning point for you in achieving sobriety?
Definitely the cliche that you have to lose everything. And I had lost everything and had to sort of change and start over again. And I went into rehab and then into sober living and had to, you know, get a day job and, you know, just start over and sort of shake my old identity as, you know, the drummer of Hole and sort of rebuild myself with not just that, you know, being my only thing that, you know, I do. I kind of shook that old self and built some sort of esteem in a new self, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I really appreciate you sharing this with us. So I'm gonna
Thank
end
you.
This conversation by reminding everyone that your book, Hit So Hard, a memoir, is now available everywhere. And if they can't find it, they need to ask for it. Damn it. So
right.
That's right. So I want to thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It was great to talk to you.
There you have it, Ms. Patty Schimmel. I don't know if Patty is still playing drums now in a band, but believe me, she could really play.
Well, maybe Courtney Love will put the old band back together and do a reunion tour. On second thought, probably not.
Yeah, can I ask why some band would call itself Hole? That is a very dumb name for a rock and roll band. They should have gone with something a bit more, I don't know, peppy.
What's with you, Johan?
Yeah, I'm sure they regret that decision after selling a few million records. But anyway, I think we're now going to go to a caller who was all pumped up to, you know, to pledge his loyalty to me on that episode. I still remember his moving words of worship. Yeah, I don't think I'll ever forget him. All of my staff back then should have been shamed after his call. Yeah, let's listen to the guy. All right, Dave, run the segment.
Spud,
I'm being told we have another caller, but it's not a celebrity. Do you want to take it?
What? Do you think I only talk to famous people on the phone? Well, every day I talk to, like, the pizza delivery guy or the cable company or bill collectors. I'm a man of the people.
We're coming for you, globalist!
Just put it through. Hey, caller, you there?
Yeah, is this Spud?
Yep, absolutely. So, what's on your mind, man?
Well, I'm a regular listener, and I wanted to pledge my loyalty, if it's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I'm not on your staff, but I love the show.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
Oh, Spud, you should get this guy to write a positive review for the show on some website, like maybe Entertainment Tonight or Us Weekly.
Yeah, good idea. And Dorothy. Hey, can you write a really glowing review of the show for us and at least put it up on, like, iTunes and a few other places? What do you
think? Sure, you bet.
All right.
So can I pledge my loyalty right now?
Lauren, will you accept this for us?
I guess, but it's not really necessary. You know, I'm basically concerned with the loyalty of those, you know, here in the studio, because you never know who might want to pull, like, a Julius Caesar on me at any time.
I'm more of a front-stabbing person.
Should I salute you, too? I know you can't see me doing it here in my bedroom.
No,
but if you can,
I don't think
I can
so.
If you want.
No, I don't demand Heil Spud when I walk into the room here. I'm not an egomaniac or anything.
I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay? It's, like, incredible.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that those around me have my best interests at heart and respect my talents.
As you should.
Yeah.
If I worked for you, I would make you feel very secure and supported. I know all about the anxiety caused when you are with people that could care less about you. My ex-best friend Scott would never pledge his loyalty to me, even though I did everything for him. I mean, once I took all the blame when he forgot his wife's birthday.
That's so hot.
Oh, did she buy it?
Well, no. And I'll never do that again. But the point is, there are very few people who are truly loyal, you know? I am that person, Spud. And I'll be there for you if you need me.
Well, we really don't need another intern or anything, but thank you for your support.
Yeah, and caller, we've got to go now, but thank you for calling in. We appreciate
it. Hey, don't hang up on this caller. That's my job.
Oh.
Okay, now you can hang up on him.
Hey, you should have asked him to at least start a fan club or something. Guys like him are pretty rare.
Oh, do we have his number on caller ID? Hey, have one of the interns call him back right now and tell him to start a freaking fan club. I've always wanted one of those. All right, now I...
If staff would have followed my directive and contacted that caller, I know he would have started the Spud Goodman fan club, which, you know, would have made me extremely happy. Very happy. You know, I've never had a fan club. And that dude was probably my only shot at getting one.
Oh, you're right about that. No way at this point in your career, Spud, is anyone going to start a Spud Goodman fan club.
I guess you could start your own one, Spud. I know it wouldn't mean much, but still, you might get a few people to join, especially if you offered some free stuff to members.
I don't think so.
You know, I would join your fan club, Spud, and you wouldn't even have to give me any free memorabilia.
No thanks. Okay, let's now go to our final in-studio discussion on the loyalty pledge episode. I still remember that warm display of support from staff when I requested an on-air verbal pledge of loyalty to me. I now get, though, how all dictators crave these type of endorsements. There's nothing like hearing someone say out loud that they are 100% behind you, even like 140% behind you. I'm going to enjoy hearing this one once again. Yeah, Dave, run the segment.
All right. Are you really going to insist on this, Spud? Really?
It'll only take a minute. Go ahead.
Right now?
Yeah. Go ahead, Mike. Just do it.
Okay. Spud, as a sound engineer on the show, I'd like to say what an honor it is to work with you each week.
That's it?
Yeah. That's all I got.
Come on, yo.
Okay, whatever. Who's next?
I think Dave, our audio director, is up. Dave, grab a mic.
Spud, it has been my privilege to serve as your audio director for over 25 years. You have been such a strong leader of our organization. Okay. Words cannot express the admiration and respect I hold for you.
Thank you, Dave. That was touching.
Oh, brother.
Should I also say what a visionary you are, too? I think that's something you've mentioned about yourself in the past.
No, I think we're good.
Okay, and our video director, TJ, has something to say. TJ?
Well, Spud, I don't think you totally suck.
Spud, okay. Can I ask what point you're trying to make here? You know, forced public displays of support do not have the legitimacy you desire. What? Are you now going to ask that we slap up posters of your face around the studio?
No.
I've never in my lifetime questioned authority. So. But this is pushing my limits.
Gerald.
We're not going to do
that. Yeah.
Loyalty, really, it's always been big for Spud. When he was a junior in high school, he ran for class treasurer and put out a petition for students to sign. Right. And you remember that said if anybody but you would be elected, the students would go on a hunger strike. Do you remember that? You do?
Of course I do.
And your mother got called to the school for a very intense conference with the principal.
I'm amazed you remember it.
Hmm.
It was a totally rigged election, and they said I lost, but I knew the truth.
Look, alternative facts are not facts.
I tried to contest the results, but the sellout student body president was backing his buddy who won. He was a fake class treasurer in my mind, and that was my first taste of election tampering.
Russia, if you're listening...
You know, if you're trying to make the point with this nonsense that President Trump, by demanding public displays of loyalty from his cabinet, was being unreasonable or egomaniacal, well, I mean, he is our commander-in-chief and leader of the free world, and you're a radio talk show host.
You suck!
I will admit, when I saw that moron Trump put on that dog and pony show with his staff on TV, I laughed. But now, after further thought, I think I can understand where he was coming from.
People can't figure me out. They can't process me. I don't expect them to. You can't process me with a normal brain.
A leader needs to know who's with him and who's maybe on the fence.
Remember, Spud, I'm blood. So I really can't be on that fence myself.
I never doubted your loyalty for a second, Aunt Dorothy.
Good.
So you don't trust the loyalty of everyone else in the studio? Wow.
Don't be so overly dramatic about it.
I think it was that other god of yours, Ronald Reagan, that said, trust but verify.
Yes!
I know for a fact, right now, I'm going to sleep much better tonight. I appreciate everyone. Anyway, I need to wrap this show up now. I am Spud Goodman. Be all that you can be, and I mean that. God bless and ciao.
Bye-bye.
I know I'm just an intern, but how do you guys handle Spud's enormous ego? I read about people like him in high school history class. It was always ended badly.
Oh, I get it. Spud has had a messiah complex since his early years.
What'd you do? Screw up like the Beatles and say you were bigger than Jesus?
Once, he demanded his parents declare his birthday a family holiday.
Yeah, Chance, it must be tough for an intern to be subjected to someone like him, but try not to take everything he says personally. I know, when he continually makes jokes at my expense, he's not serious. Spud is just a very misunderstood man. Underneath it all, he's very sweet.
Heidly ho, neighborinos!
No one has ever called me a phone-worshipping millennial space waster before. I'm not even sure what that means.
Well, yeah. I think he feels you are too attached to your phone.
Yeah, you know, Spud is somewhat of a Luddite. He hates technology and what it has brought to our lives.
Oh, yes. It probably reminds him of his own mortality.
Yeah.
Your embrace of current gadgetry is probably threatening to him, Chance, as he can barely use his TV remote control.
Okay. I'll try and treat him like I do my Uncle Roger. He's an alcoholic, and our family just looks the other way when he gets obnoxious.
Right. Well, that's what we all try to do.
Yeah, you know, just look at him like a little kid who never grew up. He's really like a 12-year-old in an older man's body.
A messed up 12-year-old.
People can't figure me out. They can't process me. I don't expect them to. You can't process me with a normal brain.
But, Chance, do try and keep your phone in your pocket when you're around, Spud. For everyone's sake.
Okay.
Yeah, and just try to remember what my old Little League coach used to say after he spent a few minutes screaming at me, sometimes with spit coming out of his mouth when I made an error or struck out. He told me later that if he wasn't yelling at a player, that meant he didn't care. I guess Spud must really care about you and I, Chance.
Okay, I guess that's one way to look at it.
You know, I don't appreciate you guys talking behind my back when I leave the studio. Those are some nasty words expressed. At least I say mean things right to your faces.
Yeah, you know, I felt bad when I first heard the replay of what we said back then, Spud. And I will take full responsibility for my mean words. Next time, I'll make sure that Dave is not still recording in the control room when I say something.
I stand behind everything I said. Have a backbone, Gerald.
And Spud, you know how I feel about you. I love you, but I'm conflicted at times because you are so darn annoying.
Well, you know, listening to the rather weak pledges of loyalty expressed, you know, by the staff on that episode, I sincerely doubt I'm ever going to ask again for proof of support from my coworkers. It was just so disappointing. I thought it would, you know, put some pep in my step. But, not so much.
The reason Trump gets all his people to prostitute themselves and kiss his feet is they're afraid of him.
And it only makes common sense.
No one is afraid of you, Spud.
Right. He's got a point. And no rational person would ever demand those around him or her to continually say how smart they are. I know Hitler's people were able to deliver total devotion to him until they weren't. Most blowhard fascists who crave this generally go out in a cloud of shame. I think it's always best to let others make up their own minds about how they feel. Never threaten them with retribution if they don't bend the knee.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess he might be a decent example of that. But anyway, still, I bet it feels really, really cool to hear everyone around you. I mean, just say you're the best thing since, like, fire was discovered or the wheel. I mean, I'll never know myself. That's just the fact. Okay, I'm going to end this thing on that note. I am Spud Goodman. Be all that you can be, and I mean that. God bless and ciao.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, everyone.
Yes, yes. Yes, goodbye.
Yeah, later.
Hey, I already said goodbye. It was meant to be from everyone. Oh, well, whatever. Bye.
The Spud Goodman Show is produced by David Brenneman of Rosedale Audio Productions and recorded at NWCZ Radio. Engineer Mike Renville, executive producer Lori Madsen. Written and directed by Spud Goodman. Associate producer and video director TJ Pites. Production assistants Brian Martin and Chance Morrison. Original music by Mike Spots and Tom Harmon. On-air talent Rob McGee, David Deere, Pam McGee, and Tom Nolan. Copyright 2017 Spud Goodman Productions. David Brenneman speaking.
You have been listening to
The Spud Goodman Show,
another program written and produced by the international staff of United Nations Radio.
Inside the Spud Goodman Radio Show podcast, copyright 2025, Spud Goodman Productions.